Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is September 24th. This is Peter Paul Brizola working with the New Shadow. For people to call in, here's the guest call-in number, 1-347-633-9620. This is September 24th, an interesting day in history with a few interesting birthdays. Excuse me. Today is the birthday, for those of you who are of a literary bent, F. Scott Fitzgerald, who was born in 1896 and he died in 1940. Those of you who remember The Great Gatsby, and star in that film was Robert Redford, who was in A Bridge Too Far, which we talked about, which was the depiction of the attempt to cross the bridges over the Rhine to end World War II in Europe. He was also politically involved in, with his Sundance, a movie project in Utah. He was a former Catholic. I think he became a Mormon, or converted to Mormonism. Nothing wrong with that, he believes. Also, he was in the 3 Days of the Condor, the CIA film, with John Houseman. We talked about Tuesday, whose birthday was Tuesday, the great director, actor, screenwriter. He wrote the script. It's also very important to talk about history in full circle. In 1869, we had a major financial crisis, very similar to the financial crises of today, in which Jay Gould and James Fisk, two questionable financial and controversial financial operatives, tried to corner the gold market, and they caused a major financial panic. This was one of the financial scandals of the President Grant administration. Remember, he succeeded Andrew Johnson, who did not get a second term. It's also, interestingly, this month, 1755 was the birthday of John Marshall, who was our fourth Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He wasn't the first, like a lot of people think. In fact, the first Chief Justice was John Jay. There's some controversy as to whether or not he went to law school, which really didn't matter. He did pass the bar, or was admitted to the bar, is what they called it in those days. And there were two other, he only was Chief Justice for 5 years. The longest serving Chief Justice, I think, was, mine is slipping in my old age here. But anyway, it wasn't John Jay, and it wasn't Earl Warren. Earl Warren comes up today because in 1964, Earl Warren, the Chief Justice, the late Chief Justice, and former Governor of California, former Vice Presidential candidate in 1948 under the Tom Dewey ticket. Warren also was the Governor of California, and he was partially responsible for the forcible removal and relocation of Americans of Japanese ethnicity after Pearl Harbor. And he was also district attorney of Alameda County, which was one of the controversial counties and still is in California. And Earl Warren was appointed by Congress and the president, Lyndon Johnson, to investigate. Now, it's a very controversial investigation and findings of the assassination and the assassin who was involved in the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. His son, or his grandson, excuse me, James Warren, is a Superior Court judge in San Francisco City and County, and he was a judge in the Gay Pride Month in June 1999 when they were going to try Stephen Neri. And Stephen Neri is part of a campaign. He's a U.S. Navy sailor who was raped, stalked, raped, and railroaded, drugged and railroaded by San Francisco's homosexual politicians and judges and DA into a federal, state prison. Many violations, which are documented in on the website under Stephen, N-E-R-Y, N-A-R-Y, and also in the book, part of his story is documented in What's the Matter with California, written by the famous journalist Jack Cashel, C-A-S-H-E-L-L. And currently there is a campaign to get Governor Schwarzenegger to promptly parole Stephen Neri, and he will be vindicated. It just takes some time. But what's important was Warren was also, James Warren was also the judge in the lesbian dog bite case in which the landlord and the property management company or manager in a major big San Francisco apartment building in Pacific Heights allowed two lawyers, controversial lawyers who were tenants there, to keep two dangerous dogs, and these are worse than pit bulls. And they attacked, mauled, and mutilated a lesbian who was a, I don't think she may have been wearing perfume, which some dog trainers think affects dogs. We don't know because it was never fully explored. But anyway, the dogs mutilated her. She had a politically connected lesbian lover. There was a trial presided over by James Warren. They moved the trial to L.A. because of all the controversy. Interestingly, in that trial, an assistant district attorney, she was there for window dressing, was the former wife of the current mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, who thinks he should be elected governor of California. That's another story in and of itself. But Governor and Chief Justice Earl Warren only was on the bench as Chief Justice for 15 years. President Eisenhower also had a heart attack on September 24th, back during his administration, early part of his administration, said that when he appointed Earl Warren to the Supreme Court as Chief Justice, it was the biggest mistake he had made, because Warren went from being a conservative to being a what some people consider a flaming liberal. Today is also, getting back to John Jay, he was another guy who served in many federal government positions, Secretary of State. He quit the U.S. Supreme Court, resigned his position as Chief Justice to run, of all things, run for governor of New York. So people do strange things when they're get positions that they're uncomfortable in or they think they can't make an impact. There's a question as to whether or not John Jay went to law school, but he did. He was admitted to the bar and worked with Robert Livingston, who was the principal financier of the American Revolution, and who also was a lawyer and financier and bank, I believe a banker. Today is also the day in 1976, some more San Francisco notorious history, where Patty Hearst, the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst, the newspaper and media magnate, Patty Hearst was convicted of bank robbery and being involved with the SLA and the murders that they were involved in. She also hung out in an area of San Francisco, which has a connection to the Stephen Neri case. One of the jurors, a lesbian Iranian, who lives there, and we'll get into that another time. Anyway, Patty Hearst was sentenced to 7 years in federal prison. She ends up, once she was released, she ends up marrying one of the U.S. deputy marshals who was involved in apprehending her or guarding her or something. But anyway, that's what's interesting about Patty Hearst. It's also the birthday in 1900 of Stephen Bechtel. That's the major American construction company headquartered in San Francisco. They were involved in a lot of the military construction projects around the world, and there's some controversy about that firm. But Stephen Bechtel was born in 1900. He died in 1989. And for those of you who are fond of the Muppets, it's Jim Henson's birthday. He was born in 1936, and he died in 1990. Excuse me. Oh, slight cold today. It's also in 1891, the first Tin Lizzie, Henry Ford, completed the construction of the first Ford, the fully motorized car, and of course put Ford on the map. A lot of people don't know this, that the Russians in the Joseph Stalin administration, or dictatorship more appropriately, Henry Ford, or his technology and his genius manufacturing, they ended up setting an automobile factory in Russia before World War II. They used that technology to help develop the famous T-34 tank. That's the tank that could match the infamous German Panzer tanks. The Germans put the emphasis on big guns and thick armor. The Russians used thin-skinned vehicles, which had great mobility. And they built a lot more than the Nazis were able to build. And that's one of the reasons that helped the Russians defeat the Nazi armies on the Eastern Front. Interestingly, also, the connection of the United Auto Workers, Walter Reuther and his brother, went to Russia to help the Russian automobile workers learn American techniques of manufacturing and mass production lines. Also, Paul Robeson, the great black singer, also had a law degree from Columbia University, but unfortunately he got caught up in communist politics. He went to Russia during the Depression to sing and perform for the Soviet proletarian. And, of course, I think they yanked his passport. His son is and granddaughter is still living today. Robeson made couple of movies, and which are still famous today, and his recordings are still available. He had a great voice, but he had lousy politics, poor judgment in politics. That's often the case of musicians who get involved in politics, like Leonard Bernstein, Willem Mengelberg, the great conductor of the Concertgebouw, who the famous Dutch symphony orchestra, which performed for the Nazis, and after the war, the Dutch people never forgave him, and he got kicked out of his position as permanent conductor, and he died disgruntled in Switzerland. But this is what happens when musicians make the mistake of getting involved in politics. Excuse me. And then 1960, going along with continuing with military history, the USS Enterprise, the first nuclear-powered carrier, was launched, and we still—I think it's still operating. I forgot where it's at. You know, that's one of the things that after that, we've seen other companies, the Brits, the French, the Russians, develop, and I think the Chinese are at it too. The Chinese, people don't know this or are ignorant of this fact, that in the 15th century, China was one of the great maritime powers and were experts in naval architecture and technology. But for some reason, and this is, I guess, part of the Chinese character, that they became xenophobic, and the current emperor at that time, they went through many dynasties. I don't know which dynasty it was. I've forgotten. Ordered all the ships destroyed. It is said that it's claimed that the New York Times had an article in New York Times Magazine several years ago that the Chinese circumnavigated the world about that time. They had an admiral who, interestingly, was a eunuch, and they ended up shipwrecked on the east coast or west coast of Africa, and the descendants the people still can be found there today. And, of course, some of them were probably impressed into slavery by British, American, Portuguese, and Spanish slavers and brought to America. People should also be aware that Portugal was the last country to abolish slavery, I think, in the late 1800s. Britain was the first, followed by the United States. And the Dutch were also very involved in the slave trade. Excuse me. And in this date in 1968, the famous CBS News program 60 Minutes was launched with Don Hewitt, who served in the U.S. Navy and Coast Guard in World War II. He drops out of college, interesting, college dropout, and look where he landed after World War II. And he recently died, I think, 2 months ago. And then, of course, we have Mike Wallace, who's still around. And Ed Bradley died, the black newsman from Detroit. He died recently. And Maurice Safer is still around. In 1998, we saw the first $20 bills, which was supposed to be hard to counterfeit. Now the counterfeiters are going after $100 bills. And the country that's involved in counterfeiting, we don't pay much attention to this, was North Korea. And they've managed to very competently, it's very hard to distinguish these counterfeit $100 bills, but they're supposed to be coming out of their embassy in Moscow and circulating, of course, illegally around the world. Excuse me. And then, of course, currently we have the world leaders, Ahmadinejad, Chavez, the guy from Libya, Gaddafi, all at the UN. Well, 2 years ago, Ahmadinejad was here in New York, and he got into a debate at Columbia University and almost was kicked out of the country or asked to leave. He got into a debate, which apparently he lost, and, of course, he hasn't learned his lesson to watch his remarks and to bridle his mouth, but that's those crazies over there. It'll be interesting to see, considering the volatile politics of the Middle East, whether he survives because there have been, of course, the former dictator ended up being hanged, and they've had many of their leaders die by assassination. I am not recommending it. I'm just repeating what has happened in history. excuse me. What people are not hearing about, and I bring this up, and it's becoming more and more egregious, these cases involving U.S. military, federal military personnel. Now, I make the remark when I say federal military personnel. That's the people who joined the federal military. But we should note, and this is happening right now, National Guards and reservists who are in the National Guard can be federalized, and they come under federal military law, which is Universal Code of Military Justice, also known as UCMJ. Well, a notorious case which has not been covered, and certainly not in the press that I have seen, a Marine named Sergeant Bryant W. Foster. He was falsely convicted and railroaded into a California prison. He was finally freed after 9 years. And, of course, he was falsely accused of his estranged wife, falsely accused him of raping her and assaulting her for 4 years. And it involved a divorce and custody of the two sons. He was heterosexual. And he thought he would be subjected to a court-martial, but people should realize that when a crime is committed in a jurisdiction, if it's in the United States, that a federal military or a National Guards who's been federalized can be tried both at court-martial, federal prison, a federal court, and local civilian court. There are special due process regulations to protect their rights, but they're ignored in California and probably other places as well. It's called the Code of Federal Regulations, Book 32. And in this case, we don't know whether or not the governor of California requested that Sergeant Bryant Foster be turned over by the Navy. Anyway, he was railroaded into state prison for 17 years. That was his sentence, and he lost his. He was busted to private, and what's happened is they get a these people get a dishonorable discharge. He couldn't clear his name, but he's maintained his innocence, just as Stephen Nery, the U.S. Navy, 18-year-old U.S. Navy sailor. He had a good attorney, a guy named Kevin McDermott, who filed papers in 2000, and finally that conviction was thrown out by a California state appellate court. And now the Marine Corps is a branch of the U.S. Navy. A lot of people don't know that, and of course a lot of Marines think they're a separate entity, but they're not. Although the Marines are the oldest of our fighting forces. He's trying to get back pay and allowances, which amount to about $250,000, and reinstatement. I think he's been reinstated as a sergeant in the Marine Corps. Also, the state of California owes him $100 a day for those 9 years of false imprisonment. So, this is what happened. We've got other federal military people who have been in prison, like Tim Masters in Colorado, who is suing the state of Colorado for falsely imprisoning him. He was accused of a rape murder, which he couldn't have done. And in fact, 48 Hours presented his case a couple of weeks ago. And he was, like Stephen Nery, an 18-year-old sailor who was pulled off out of the Navy, tried in a Colorado state court, railroaded into a Colorado state prison, and he was there for nearly 10 years. And he finally got exonerated, and now he's suing the people who are responsible for railroading him into a Colorado state prison. And it involves two former Colorado prosecutors who are now controversial Colorado state judges. This often happens, that we see these ambitious prosecutors, like the guy Nifong in North Carolina, who tried to railroad those Duke rugby players who were falsely accused of raping this black exotic dancer at a frat house. And it turns out she made the whole thing up, and she was hoping to make media money out of it, and didn't work. And fortunately for these Duke University rugby players, their families had money that could hire competent and effective lawyers who got them exonerated of the charges. And, of course, they're not attending Duke anymore. And Nifong, the corrupt local prosecutor, was finally disbarred. He belongs in a North Carolina prison. Incidentally, North Carolina has one of the highest prison populations in the country. You wouldn't think that. Of course, California ranks higher in the number of prisoners, and it's one of the reasons why we're having eruptions and disturbances and riots throughout the California state prison system. And one of my comments is that some of the best lawyers are behind bars. Some of the worst ones, such as the ones who are involved in the Stephen Nery case and this Foster case, they belong behind bars. And so this is going to be interesting. But people should pay attention. We're asking these people, these young men and women, to put on the uniform, to die for us if necessary, but yet we don't protect their due process rights when it comes to these situations. Incidentally, we had another jury tampering case here in San Francisco. There's very little information at this time, except that one of the jurors in a murder case, the judge, like Kevin Ryan pulled in the Stephen Nery case, was involved with a juror, and the defense attorney protested that this was jury tampering. Now, this is the basic information we have right now, and as soon as we get the whole docket case, then I'll get into it. But the California State Appellate Court decided, no, this wasn't jury tampering. The judge, so what if he talked to one of the jurors in the case while they were trying to reach a decision? And it was only one juror. It wasn't in open court. So this is as far. This is the information we have so far. But increasingly we have these cases in the San Francisco court system, which has become one of the most corrupt, if not in the state of California, and if not in the United States, but certainly in the state of California. There's more and more cases of juries being openly tampered with in this state and in this county. But remember that the American taxpayer pays for all of this. You should think about that. You're paying for the judge's salary, his vacation, his health care, which you may or may not be able to keep or get, his retirement package, his or her, I should say, and paying for jurors and all of that, court personnel, courtroom personnel, the sheriff's deputies. A lot of money goes into each trial. And so it's very important that we not only prosecute the guilty, but we also should protect the innocent from having their rights being violated and going through an unnecessary trial, which costs the American taxpayer millions of dollars every year throughout the country. So, the important thing also to remember is that we need to know who is vetting these people who want to become judges. We don't know. All of a sudden, you hear the governor's office announce that he's appointing someone to a state judiciary position, and people saying, well, who's this guy? Where did he come from? And then the other question is, who proposed him, or him or her? So it's important that you don't know, and this is something important that people throughout the country should pay attention to. You never know whether you are going to be before that judge or those judges in either a civil proceeding or a criminal proceeding or a probate proceeding or a juvenile court proceeding. So it's important to know who's sitting up there on the bench looking down and judging you. It's too late to worry about it and be concerned about it if it happens to you. You should know and be prepared for these eventualities, and hopefully they won't happen to you. The other thing is that we need term limits on these prosecutors. We see more and more of these district attorneys and these public defenders who are in there for practically for life. This is what happened here in San Francisco, and the public defender's office was known as the dumpster, and this is what lawyers, and nobody wanted, no decent, competent, and ethical lawyer wanted anything to do with that office. And the former public defender, a guy named Brown, was the cousin of Jerry Brown, who is the state attorney general, who thinks he should be elected governor for the third time. So we'll see where that goes. But this is what's going on, that these guys get in there, they bring in their buddies who give them campaign contributions, and they're in there like cockroaches in a cupboard. And some of them are competent, but increasingly we see these people get in there and they think not only do they sit on the right hand of God, some of them think that they are God. And they often, more and more of them are being promoted or seeking state court judgeships, which in California and throughout the country, these guys are in effect there for life. And the media, even the alternative media and the downstream press, the corporate press, doesn't pay attention to these people. And what's happening when they come up for re-election in California, it's like 10 years they're on the bench. We think that there ought to be term limits and no more than 20 years, the people don't know much about them, and everybody just rubber stamps or marks the box, yes, approved for another 10-year term. And we don't know if these people are competent, if they've been taking bribes, and a couple have. We've documented that. That's an area of government we need to pay more attention to if you want justice that's both fair and it costs the least amount of money and doesn't railroad people into prison and destroy their lives. Because it could happen to you, and then you're going to wish that you paid attention to this issue, and you're going to wish that there are people you could afford a lawyer. And some of these criminal lawyers charge as much as $30,000 to take your case. And, of course, we have the George Walker controversy where he got all this money up front, $35,000, didn't do a damn thing, produced a boilerplate brief of 4 pages, and we'll put that up on the web. and tried to railroad Steve, help railroad Steve Nary into California State Prison, and telling him that he should take a plea bargain when the kid said, "I'm innocent. I defended myself against male rape." And, of course, we found out that George Godhammer Walker was the buddy-buddy of the prosecutor, Terrence Hallinan, who was accused of being one of the most corrupt district attorneys in the history of the state of California. So you need to pay attention to these things no matter where you are around the country. In fact, in Illinois, we had in DuPage County, which is the next county over from Cook County, there was a guy named Ryan who railroaded a bunch of people into the state prison there. Stateville is San Quentin. And ironically, the governor, George W. Ryan, not related, same name clan, he reviewed their cases and freed these guys. They were sentenced to life in prison by this corrupt prosecutor named Ryan. And, of course, this guy thought that since he railroaded so many people into prison, I didn't consider it railroading, but he had this high conviction rate that he should be appointed, elected governor of Illinois. Fortunately, the people of Illinois thought better. But then again, they got Blago, and, of course, he may end up in the same state prison or federal prison as George W. Ryan, who's accused of taking bribes and is in a federal prison. He's appealing that conviction. So we'll see where that happens. And it's interesting that Illinois, sad to say, being born there, had more governors, had many governors, at least four, go to state prison, go to federal prison. In fact, they had one who was a federal judge, Otto Kerner, who was also at about the same time in 1963, was appointed by Lyndon Johnson after the riots throughout the country. He was appointed head of the Civil Rights Commission that investigated the cause of the riots in Watts and Detroit and around the country. And for his work, he was governor of Illinois. He was also a U.S. attorney after World War II. He's the guy who said there's no such thing as the mafia. In Illinois, I tell you something about him, and he was a general in the Illinois National Guard, famous political family in Illinois, and for his work on the Civil Rights Commission, he was appointed by Lyndon Johnson to a federal judgeship on the 7th Federal Circuit Appellate Court. He was governor of Illinois, and while he was governor, he was accused of taking bribes or being involved in a bribe scheme, and with a guy named Theodore Isaacs, who was the state revenue director. And he was tried, and he appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. They refused to hear his appeal, and he was sentenced to federal prison, I think, in Minnesota. He died unable to clear his name, and he died unlamented and in disgrace. So this does happen. It just goes to show you also that there's such a thing as, hey, no matter how high you rise in life, whatever position you get, if you're corrupt, you can be taken on, taken down, and taken out. Now, interestingly, we have the case in San Francisco of the terrorists, the Bill Ayers and his wife Bernadine Dorn, who are accused, and they haven't been able to allay the public's opinion of their terrorist activities during the 60s and 70s. Accused of being involved in the murder, the terrorist-sponsored murder of Brian O'Donnell, a San Francisco policeman who was a desk sergeant in the Haight-Ashbury, where I lived at the time. And there were several others, the Ingleside murder of a San Francisco cop. And there were other cops who were killed and then attempted bombings of various buildings and politicians, such as Dianne Feinstein. Can you believe that? That the bomb didn't go off, but I think it was planted at her house. But anyway, they claimed that they were innocent, but the informants and the FBI and the police, San Francisco police and others who've been investigating that case, think they have evidence that points to them as being implicated in the you can call it a political assassination of policemen. But you should remember, people, it's one thing about law enforcement. They don't forget when one of their own are murdered. It may take a long time, but eventually they do catch the perpetrators. They end up being tried unless they died before that time. and they end up in state or federal prison. So the other infamous murder of a San Francisco cop, a case which I was involved in from a different angle. I knew the cops involved, and I was working as an investigator in the Brodnick case, which is on the web, Inspector Brodnick. The Lo Siete, the seven, that's the Spanish translation. These are a bunch of thugs who were caught burglarizing a house in the Castro, and that's before it became really gay. They got into a scuffle with the cop who was trying to arrest them, and the other cop was McGoran. He was wounded, and Brodnick was killed. And they were tried in a San Francisco court, very controversial trial. William Kunstler was involved, a notorious left-wing New York communist lawyer, and Charles Gary, the Black Panthers lawyer, was the principal legal counsel for the defense. They were acquitted in a controversial trial, but they all of them ended up either dying violently in some other criminal activity or dying in prison. So it just goes to show you, eventually your karma, if you play those games and you play those roles, it catches up to you, and like a boomerang, it takes you out. So that's something that people should remember, that that nobody who engages in these things are untouchable. excuse me, what's the other thing I was going to say? A little sore throat today. We're going to keep trying this hour, or 45 minutes, and we encourage you, go to our video websites and videos on YouTube at Amicus, A-M-I-C-U-S, V-E-R-I-T-A-S. We'll be putting more up there. And also to our websites, Amicus, AMICUSVERITAS.org. Follow the links to whichever websites up there you're interested in, whether it's vote fraud, judicial corruption. One of my favorites, or it's one of the most popular of the websites, is these pedophiles, particularly wealthy pedophiles. People around the world have been accessing that website on public corruption. This financier who was molesting boys in Thailand and Mexico, involved in the ex-Soviet Union. I don't know where he's at. He was supposed to be tried in Mexico, but Senor Tommy was called. For some reason, people like that one, and the real estate racketeering, which is related to Acorn. A lot of people don't know this, that Acorn was involved under other names and with other groups in San Francisco and Oakland and Northern California, and throughout the state. And interestingly, one of the affordable housing developers, a guy named Ian Donald Turner from New Jersey, who was also Secretary of Housing Development for the first Governor Jerry Brown administration, he started a thing called Bridge Housing, or what has been known by its critics as the Path to Graft. And he was on he set up this operation at 82 Second Street, which was also the headquarters. This was the headquarters for Bridge Housing and associated groups like Tides, Shaylin Foundation, and also connected to Saul Alinsky. People may not know this, but during the Depression, Al Capone set up soup kitchens in Chicago. I don't know whether he paid, or the mafia paid for the food, or extorted it from local grocers and merchants. But even the Hearst, the History Channel, did a story on Al Capone's soup kitchens. But Saul Alinsky was involved with Al Capone, and that's where he got some of his ideas on organizing, which became Acorn, which incidentally was set up in Little Rock, Arkansas. A lot of people don't know that Al Capone spent some time down there. The Chicago Mafia would go down there, and that part of Arkansas was attracted other wealthy people, whether mafia, for some reason. But anyway, it's interesting that Acorn was founded in Arkansas, but they spread all throughout the country. And then the organizers that we see, these quote community organizers, came out of an organization called the Midwest Academy, which was headquartered in Chicago, and it was run by Paul and Heather Booth, who have since decamped to Washington and are now involved in poverty hijacking. That's what their critics think. Let's just say non-accountability for federal poverty funds with these various groups, which has spread their tentacles throughout the country. Millions of dollars are involved, and people are beginning to hear about this money that's not accounted for with the Acorn scandal, what I call the bad seed, which has affected the body politic, something we need to regurgitate permanently. But we're going to continue to document as much as possible with pictures and documents on all of our multimedia outlets. And we encourage you, if you have questions or comments or criticisms, of course we don't, you know, like criticism, but we are always willing to learn, but we always don't like being criticized. I'm just joking. But go to our email, amicusveritas@yahoo.net, excuse me, and pverzola@gmail.net. So I hope to hear from you. If you have some news item, that's welcomed. And we'll be bringing up more practical information. Incidentally, there was a report, since we try to be eclectic, there was a report by, I think, CDC that didn't get too much media play, but a lot of us have the habit, when we take a shower, we gargle our mouths and brush our teeth and, of course, gargle and spit out. But there are various bacteria in the shower lines, whether you take a shower in a gym, at their schools, that's something to be concerned about. Not only that kids have been getting raped, and especially in the San Francisco schools, that's why a lot of kids don't want to take showers after PT. But if you're at a gym or whatever, you might not want to gargle with the shower water. Anyway, that's been causing these colds and various diseases. It might be it's a possibility that you can come down with this new flu. I would recommend that you gargle. Don't use Listerine. I don't approve of it. Or some of the other astringents. But use a good gargle. In fact, a good one is sea salt, and it's cheap. And then also I heard that apple cider vinegar, which you can also swallow without. It's good for you, but you might just want to spit it out. But be very careful about gargling and brushing your teeth under a shower, whether you're in a gym or whatever other facility, your country club, public your school gym, or your club, your like 24-hour fitness, or at home. And periodically take that shower head off and clean out any debris that's in that shower pipeline. That will help you. It also help prevent you from getting a skin disease. I learned the hard way because I came down with a nasty cold and couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And I happened to read this article, and then I read, oh my gosh, I've been brushing my teeth as I shower to save water. But it turns out it cost me more money. I didn't save much on the water, but it cost me for medicines to get rid of this horrible cold. I'm in the last phases of that. We'll be back on next Tuesday, which will be a very significant date. And we'll have more variety, and I hope we're almost have the technology, or we cleaned up the some of these tapes, and we're able to transfer them to our computers so they can be uploaded and broadcast. Some of the excerpts and tapes are on our webpage, is amicusveritas.org. They should be still there. Anyway, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Hope to hear from people. And if you think this is a good hour, I know the reason we chose it was because you can hear it drive time on the East Coast. We had tried the early morning, but for some reason that didn't work. But we would encourage you to call in or listen. And this can be downloaded. Mm-hmm. This can be downloaded on your iPod. This is Peter Paul Brazola working with the New Shadow. Thanks for listening. I don't know. Mm-hmm.